Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Yesterday, a 17-year-old opened fire on students at Chardon High School in Northeast Ohio, killing one and seriously wounding others before he was captured. A second student victim has died since then. Police Chief Tim McKenna talks about his officer's response.
The first team of officers went in. It was determined that the student had run from the building, chased by a teacher. Knowing that, we got the officers in right away. Right after that, EMS followed right in the door, took care of the victims, and we got them off to the hospitals.
Police say it could have been worse, and the Chardon School District Superintendent said they have been training for such a disaster. Question for our listeners, do you think that your children have been adequately trained to respond appropriately in such a situation? Do you know what sort of training your children have had? Give us a call and tell us, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post there. Joining us now is Larry Banaszak. He's chief of police at Otterbein University. Since 2007, Larry has hosted several training sessions for university students, staff, and faculty. He also has visited other school districts, businesses, and governmental agencies to train them in how to respond in the case of an active shooter incident. It's called the Response to Campus Shooter Program. Welcome to the show, Larry Banaszak.
Thank you very much, Ann.
So what do we mean by an active shooter? Is it obvious, painfully obvious, or is there a distinction?
Yes, just as it sounds, this is an individual that comes onto campus or onto the school grounds and begins to shoot individuals in that facility.
These incidents that we hear about, whether it's in Tennessee or Colorado or Chardon, Ohio, all seem so random. How do you train for them?
Well, first of all, I think the mindset is that this is another crisis that we have to train for. We know what to do during a tornado siren. We know what to do when the fire alarm goes off. Now we have to know what to do and have a specific plan for what to do for an active shooter on the grounds.
You know, when a fire alarm goes off or there's a tornado siren going, everybody knows at the same time. But when something like this happens, it's very insulated in a way. It's from room to room.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But nonetheless, you still need an emergency response plan. So in other words, somebody hears the gunshots. What's the plan? What's the communication process? More specifically, what do those individuals do that are faced with gunfire, either in the hallways or inside a room where the gunman is actually shooting at them?
And, you know, of course, it's different because every school is different. Every school layout is different. But what have you gleaned from the past tragedies that have, you know, captured our attention in the past 10 years or so that help you train people these days?
Well, one of the things I think that most school districts do a very good job in is locking down the school when there's an active shooter on the grounds. However, lockdown is not enough. We still need to emphasize and provide survival strategies on what to do when that shooter actually goes into a room, you know, and starts to shoot students and teachers and administrators of that particular facility.
My guest is Larry Banaszak. He's chief of police at Otterbein University. He also teaches strategies in times of crisis at schools and universities. It's called the Response to Campus Shooter Program. If you have a question or comment for them, and also if you want to share your story about what your student is taught at school in terms of responding to these kinds of crises, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. There were questions yesterday, Larry Banaszak, at the outset about whether the shooter, T.J. Lane, was acting alone. Is that the first thing you worry about?
The first thing we need to worry about is the survival reaction. The first thing we need to do is get to safety when we hear, you know, gunshots. So if we can run away from the gunshots and get to a place of safety, that's what we need to be concerned about. Secondly, if it's determined that it's not safe to run into that hallway or into a particular facility, then we need to think about locking ourselves in a particular room, barricading the door, and then going to our survival plan, which includes communicating the location and all the information we know to the authorities. The last part of it, when there is nowhere to run and when there is nowhere to hide, and when we're confronted with a shooter face-to-face, when that shooter is going up and down the rows executing students and teachers, then we need to have a plan to fight back and attack the shooter and hold that shooter down until the authorities arrive.
You know, this is pretty stressful stuff just for me to listen to right now, to think about a kid doing this. And I'm wondering, when they're training kids, when they're having their drills and whatever they do in the schools, is there any way to talk to them about the psychology of it and how to prepare themselves mentally for that? Because it seems it's about everything at that point.
Absolutely. You know, this really depends on the age level of the students that are involved. And certainly mental health professionals need to be involved in the training process. Law enforcement needs to be involved in the training process. Administrators and teachers need to be involved in the plan. Parents need to be involved in the plan and know what the plan is. It's very much a combined effort of all those particular entities and more, so that everybody understands the dynamics of the fear that is going on given those particular scenarios.
Bill in Delaware, you're on the air with Larry Banaszak, Chief of Police for Otterbein University. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is really gets down to gun control. Is there any training for anyone doing an act like this with any weapon other than a gun? Could this possibly happen with any weapon other than a gun? Is there any effort by chiefs of police, such as Mr. Banaszak, to control guns and to keep them from having situations that happen? Or are you just acquiescing to the culture that we've fallen into, that these kind of things can happen,
okay,
and we just have to be ready for them? Where's the repulsion at the laxity of the gun law?
Okay, well, there's a couple questions there, Bill. Let's hit the first one as far as the training goes, Larry Banaszak. Does it include training for other sorts of weapons, and is it typical that there would be any weapons, other weapons?
Our particular training is focused on gunshots. However, we do talk about violence, and we do talk about, you know, part of our training is practical training, where we actually have hands on the shooter and control that weapon and take the shooter down. And we talk about what if the shooter has a knife, those types of things, and how to subdue the shooter. But primarily it's focused on somebody coming in and shooting individuals within that classroom.
To what extent does the training include preemptive efforts? In other words, helping students understand what might lead to this, looking for signs of this kind of violence erupting?
One of the things we talk about in the training is potential indicators, you know, behavior characteristics of individuals that may in the future pose to be a threat of violence. You know, the Secret Service and the FBI and the government says there's no profile, so it's not like you can actually pick people out and say they're going to be violent and come into a school shooting. But there are some indicators that if individuals see that they ought to be reporting immediately, you know, to the authorities to hopefully head off a violent act.
Carol in Dayton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Hi, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Being a driver myself, my question was, if the shooting starts in the school, why is the school locked down automatically?
That's a decision that's made by each and every school district. I don't know that that's a universal decision throughout the country. You may see some school districts that promote, if the shooting occurs on the north end of campus, then the people on the south end of campus can exit the building and run to safety in a matter of a couple minutes. And I think the lockdown is something that is good, and it has its place, and it's an effective tool in some of these circumstances, but it's not a complete tool. We need to think beyond the lockdown. There are times when running away is the best course of action that can be done in that particular situation.
Thanks, Carol, for your call.
I agree with you fully.
Okay, take care. 614-292-8513. My guest is Larry Banaszak. He's chief of police at Otterbein University. He trains people, schools, helps districts understand what they can do to protect themselves when there is a live shooter on the prowl. Sean in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hi, Ann. This is Sean Little.
Hi, Sean.
I'm calling because Worthington recently at our elementary and high school had a lockdown because of a potentially dangerous person in the neighborhood. And my fifth grade daughter was, it was a brief lockdown, but I thought our principal, Mary Rakowski, handled it exceptionally well by going class to class. But my fifth grader was totally freaked and didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how to advise her what to do in that kind of a situation.
Again, I think that education is a huge portion of emergency response. And in this case, you're talking about a lockdown. So in your particular case with a fifth grader, it would be helpful ahead of time if parents were on the same page as school administrators and teachers and students, so that this type of response has already been talked about, has already been discussed, so that when it happens, it's not so unfamiliar to the students. And as you say, it doesn't freak the students out. They understand at a very early age that this is a safety response, that this is a safety mechanism, much like, you know, going to a location for a tornado or evacuating the building during a fire drill.
But is there any place as a parent where we can go to get more information to find out what we tell our children to do? She didn't know even if she was supposed to hide in a closet or get under her table.
I think that parents need to go direct with their school districts and their local law enforcement for that information.
Sean, thanks for the call.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. Take care. Tim in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Yes, thank you for your time as always. I just kind of have maybe a different perspective on this, and it may not be a popular perspective. There's nothing that excuses what these people do in terms of shooting and killing people in schools. But at the same time, and there's no indication in this case that the person that did the shooting was bullied by anybody else in the school. I think all kids get teased. Most kids get teased. Few kids get bullied, and some get harassed. And if it's a situation where that is happening, and the student and their parents or whoever is going to the school to try to get that to be amended, and that doesn't happen, then that's a problem. It doesn't excuse anything that happened, but I think in terms of what I'm hearing in terms of preparedness for these things, I think the best place, or at least the place where more needs to be done, I know some of it is just talking about that process. If I'm a child, and this gentleman is a child still, even though he's somewhat older, if he's gone to the adults in his life and they are not helping him, he doesn't have many choices left. And obviously that's never an appropriate choice. But if you're talking about a person who maybe isn't thinking clearly anyway, if we don't give them choices and we don't give them the support that they need, then it's not too surprising that on rare occasions these things happen.
Right. Tim, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Larry Benizek, did you want to respond to that?
I agree with Tim. I think he makes some really good points there.
One thing, district officials interviewed for a dispatch story today said that they didn't want to disclose their disaster protocol. So, I mean, isn't it something that most people know? For instance, if that kid's gone through disaster training in his own high school, isn't he going to already know what the plans are?
Yeah, you know, that's an objection we hear from time to time, and I think that's an individual decision that each school district has to make. What we say at Otterbein is we prefer to educate our community, you know, in order to survive these types of situations. And hopefully, even if we're educating a potential shooter, that shooter may think twice before coming into a classroom, because traditionally they think they can come in and they can just execute one student after another up and down the rows, and no one will fight back and no one will have a survival response. However, we believe now that, you know, even if we educate that potential shooter, you know, it's going to limit the amount of death and destruction that they cause on campus. And hopefully, you know, it will discourage them from any violence on campus, because they realize they're not going to be able to kill as many people as maybe they desire.
Larry Banaszak, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you, Ann. My pleasure.
Larry Banaszak, he's chief of police at Otterbein University. He runs the program. It's called the Response to Campus Shooter Program. For more information about that, we'll give a link to you on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Coming back, we're going to be talking about veterans returning to college and how colleges and universities can help them make a go of it. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, online shopping. We point, click, and buy. Then what happens? We'll investigate. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. 33 degrees in downtown Columbus, increasing clouds, and a high near 50 for today. There's a chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm. Overnight tonight, a low of 43 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms are possible for Wednesday, a warmer day with a high of 64. And then partly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 41 degrees. The Amish paints an intimate portrait of contemporary Amish faith and life. It questions why and how the Amish, an insistently closed and communal culture, have thrived within one of the most open, individualistic societies on earth. Tonight on WOSU-TV, explore how, despite their ingrained submissiveness, the Amish have successfully asserted themselves in resisting the encroachments of modern society and government. Find out what the future holds for a community rooted in the past. Watch American Experience the Amish tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Colleges and universities are experiencing an influx of veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and more are expected under the expanded benefits of the post-9/11 GI Bill. That law pays 100% of a public four-year undergraduate education to veterans who have served 3 years on active duty since September 11, 2001. But funding alone does not guarantee success for veterans. A recent Pew survey found that, more than their counterparts from previous wars, Afghanistan and Iraq war veterans struggle more in returning to civilian life. So, how can colleges and universities help? Joining us now is Mike Carroll. He's a retired Air Force ROTC officer and the Veterans Resource Analyst with the Ohio State University Office of Undergraduate Education. Mike has helped organize a one-day conference in March to help OSU faculty create a more supportive educational environment for veterans. We talked about it last fall. Yes. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you.
Also joining us now by phone from California is the keynote speaker for the conference, Kyle Hausman Stokes. Kyle served 5 years in the Army's Airborne Infantry and as a squad leader convoy commander during a year-long combat tour in Iraq, and he was awarded the Bronze Star for meritorious service and actions under fire. Kyle is also a filmmaker whose soldier-centered films are dedicated to telling the soldier's story. We'll post a link to the film on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And thanks for your service.
Thank you.
Question for listeners. Do you know a veteran struggling with college? Give us a call and tell us his or her story. What do you think colleges and universities could do to make the transition more productive? So, Kyle, you made a short film titled Now After. It's an autobiographical film about post-traumatic stress disorder from the soldier's point of view. In the film, a young veteran goes about a normal day, waking up in his apartment, driving to campus and that sort of thing. But memories of combat and flashbacks to scenes from Iraq interrupt the flow of his life. And is that, do you feel real good about the depiction of that? Is that what it's like?
Not for everybody. And, you know, one of the biggest things that we want to debunk, I think, as a whole is, we're not all ticking time bombs, not at all. But unfortunately for me, the film that I made, it was 100% autobiographical. That is what I was going through when I first got back. And I didn't really know what it was. I didn't know how to address it. And I guess the way that it came out for me was in the form of a film. And, you know, there were some other reasons for that. But no, absolutely not. Not everyone is like that. That film just shows, hopefully, very clearly what it is like for those of us who are experiencing it.
And when you returned, was there anything like that for you to kind of glom onto and relate to?
There was not. There was not. And I think that was a big part of it. It was really hard for me to express what I was going through to other people. You can try to start to talk about it, but in my experience, I kind of had the shiny object effect with people. I would talk about things for maybe 45 seconds a minute, and then someone would quickly change the topic, say, did you see this on TV or that? And, you know, it was really hurtful. You're trying to tell somebody something very, very close and personal, and every time, maybe they don't mean to, but every time they kind of quickly change the subject or ask about something else, it really shuts you down. So I wasn't comfortable talking about it after a few experiences like that. So, no, unfortunately, there wasn't.
The young man in the film seems very different and sort of separate from other college students. And one veteran has written that the buddy-centric Army culture ingrained in him does not fit well with student life the way it is these days. Was it just a matter of time, or did it take a more particular kind of adjustment for you?
It was probably just a matter of time. I mean, I find as time goes on, I understand it more. Looking back, there's a bunch of different things that I would do differently. You know, it's funny, in combat, in the military, we're taught to self-treat. You know, we have first aid, combat lifesavers. We do all these things to take care of ourselves. We wouldn't think twice about, you know, changing the tire on our Humvee or patching a wound. But when we get back and we're dealing with mental issues, we kind of just let it fall by the wayside. And I don't know, I think that's a big lesson. There's a ton of resources out there addressing this issue, through the VA and through, I was in the Army. So when I got out, you know, they told us about this. They told us to expect it. I guess I just didn't know that it was going to happen so soon and be so visceral.
In the film, there's a moment where he gets a letter from the VA and he puts it on the table, the coffee table, and he puts his keys on top of it. And I was wondering what the significance was. He doesn't actually open it up.
Right. We all kind of know, once you've received one letter from the VA, you kind of know what they say. Usually it's an appointment reminder, and definitely to the VA's credit, when I got back, one of the first organizations that reached out to me was the VA, more or less saying, we know you're back. We're here for you. You know, it's just a matter of trying to make that connection happen. And the reason I did that is just something that I do, kind of saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do first thing tomorrow. You know, if I have to grab my keys, I'm going to see this letter. But that's what that letter was. Like I said, it's a true story. And I took that letter straight to the VA, and that's kind of where my therapy or my catharsis happened.
My guest is Kyle Houseman Stokes. He's a filmmaker and U.S. Army veteran. He's going to be the keynote speaker at a conference tomorrow coming up at OSU, I think next week.
Monday.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with Kyle, if you would like to look at his film, it's about a 15-minute long film. Certainly worth your time. Very moving. Go to WOSU.org/allsides and you'll learn a lot. We'll have a link there for you. Also with us, Michael Carroll. He's retired Colonel, U.S. Air Force Veterans Resource Analyst at OSU's Office of Undergraduate Education. Mike, has this dynamic come into play on the OSU campus, that isolation that some veterans feel after life in the Army culture?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's from all branches of the military service. And you have to remember, these folks are what I call a three-prong transition that they're making. Many of them are transitioning from combat back to their daily lives. They're transitioning from the military to a civilian life, and they're transitioning to a college life. All three of those are very hard to do at times, and then to put them all together at the same time and then expect them to walk into college and perform is just, you know, that's a lot to ask of anyone.
In the film, the young man goes to the VA and sees a poster that reads, "You are not forgotten." That was another moment in the film. I wondered, was that, Kyle, another very autobiographical moment for you?
Absolutely. You know, you asked earlier what was out there for me, just kind of in the media waves saying, you know, we're welcoming you home. We know where you're coming from. And, you know, imagery like that was really comforting to me. Obviously, we all know that, you know, the POW, MIA, we're real familiar with that imagery growing up and while we're in, but it certainly means something different after you've been there, done that, and you're now returning. So, yeah, all of the organizations out there, all of the nonprofits that are putting imagery like that out there, to me, it really is helpful. Absolutely. That's what got me in.
So, Mike Carroll, what at OSU fills that role? There's the imagery and that sort of thing. If that's an important piece of it.
Right. We have a lot of different programs for veterans here, such as a Veterans Affairs Office, Counseling and Consultation Services, Mental Health and Regular Health Services. But we've got them in a spread out manner. And one thing we're looking at, you mentioned in your introduction that the numbers are rising. We've seen a 900% increase in students using the post-9/11 GI Bill in just the last 2 years. And we're up to almost 1,800 students this fall, which puts us in probably the top three in the country as far as the size of veterans attending a traditional brick and mortar school. So what we're looking at, and the reason that I was brought on, is to build a plan of How do we bring that together in a more effective and efficient manner, and but more importantly, a more veteran and military member friendly manner? So more of a one-stop shop, know where the resources are, know how to refer them out, whether it be to facilities on our campus. We're also partnering with the VA here in town. We have a wonderful facility, one of only three women's medical facilities. So we're trying to bring them into the fold as well and have them come over at regular intervals so the veterans know when they're going to be here.
You know, Kyle said that they told him about these things and that there would be things out there for them, but it's hard to reach out. It's hard to recognize it sometimes. What kind of outreach does OSU do?
We started a veterans student organization called Vets for Vets that Angela will speak about in a little bit. We've started a veterans orientation last fall that is separate from the regular student orientation. It's focused on veterans issues and the resources that are available to them. Sending out some mailings, emails, things like that, but just trying to find all the different avenues where we might capture them to let them know that while you may not need all these services or you may not need them now, they're here for you. We do care about you, and when you do need them, we'll, you know who to go to at least to get the referral and get the help that you need.
You know, Kyle Hausman-Stokes, it sounds like that human connection is super important, and in the film, the character connects with older veterans from previous wars. What was that an experience you had as well?
Absolutely. I when I finally made my way into that fateful day that kind of was the genesis of this film, I was walking in, you know, I kind of had my brow down. I had my guard up. I had a big chip on my shoulder. I didn't really want to talk to anybody. I didn't think that anybody was going to. Yeah, I knew that other Vietnam veterans, I respected them, but I thought, you know, they don't understand my war. They don't understand what I'm going through. They went through something separate, awful, but separate. And I wasn't looking for that connection. I was standing in my own way of getting help. And I was sitting in a lobby, you know, waiting for my appointment. And they just saw it. They saw it in me. I don't know. Maybe this has happened before. And they kind of, just like in the film, that they got up and kind of surrounded me and, you know, put an arm on my shoulder, literally just about grabbing me by the scruff of the neck and didn't say anything. Not a single word was exchanged. At first, I was a little taken aback. I was like, you know, you can't just touch people like that. But they didn't let go. And I don't know, it just somehow it all melted away right there. And, you know, to this day, sometimes I say some of the best therapy I've ever received is in that waiting room, just like that welcoming home into the brotherhood. I don't know. It was really something special.
Mike Carroll?
One of the things I think he's absolutely right on that. We're going to try and build on that and capture that is two-pronged mentoring. One is a peer-to-peer system that we're trying to get the current veterans that are attending Ohio State to help make that initial contact before they even arrive here in Columbus and then throughout their transition. But we've also got about 1,000 veterans that are faculty and staff here at Ohio State.
From previous wars?
Exactly. And we're trying to reach out to them to form a network where they would be willing to mentor the students while they're here at Ohio State also. So we look at it at two different ways to help them through. Again, it may just be, hey, we're here for you if you want to talk, but you're not alone.
Kyle, what about the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, those kinds of organizations out there? What's the disconnect with those for this current generation of war veterans?
You know, I think just like you said, it's a little bit generational. I'm actually just recently involved with my own local American Legion here in Hollywood, and it's been an amazing experience. And again, it's kind of a resource that's always been there that I didn't tap into. And like I said, in a lot of ways, in hindsight, I feel like I was always getting in my own way, or I just returned from the front lines with this emotional body armor, this tough guy mentality. Like, I don't need this stuff. We just don't have the time to deal with that stuff while you're over there. When you kind of come back, it's hard to flip the switch and start dealing with it. So those are great resources, and I promise that anybody who, you know, involves themselves with one of those will find it very fulfilled. And there's also some more modern generation organizations, Iraq, Afghanistan, Veterans of America, or IAVA. I've been very active with them. They're very modern. They're very tech savvy, very plugged in. So there are generations, or I'm sorry, there are organizations for our generations also.
Mike?
One of the other things, if you look at the war with Iraq and Afghanistan, it's very different than some of the previous wars we've been involved in from a perspective of there's not a front line, back line. You can't come back to the base and be safe. Traveling between front lines and the bases is just as dangerous or more dangerous than some of the combat. There's been many attacks back at the home bases. So the folks that have served in these wars are coming out where, you know, their entire time, their 24 hours a day, every day, is on edge. There was no place to go and relax when they're in theater there. So that's a very different dynamic due to the enemy's tactics with, you know, improvised explosive devices, attacks on the base, to more of an insurgent type war.
Kyle, what other topics are broached in your films?
I think another big one is just kind of the relationship with the student body. That for me was maybe the hardest part. I was alone at this campus in Southern California. I didn't really have any friends. At the point, I didn't really want to make any friends, but there was just such a disconnect between myself and my peers. And, you know, I had to drop out of college for 18 months to go and fight this war. And I came back and I kind of was ready for some acknowledgement. I was ready for people to be very aware of what's going on. And, you know, the third time somebody asks you, what's an IED? And it's just really hard. So for me, that was a big part that I'd like to incorporate in the film. And you can see it in this character. He really looks at some of these kids kind of carelessly frolicking around the campus. And, this, you know, it's very sunny and grassy and, you know, just not here in the world. And he's thinking, gosh, you know, 3 weeks ago I was just really, you know, living my part in the combat zone. So
just getting ready for school in the morning when he's packing up, it was kind of stressful. And I suppose that was the impression you wanted to give. Kyle? I think Kyle's not there anymore, unfortunately. We'll try to hook back up with Kyle. But for now, let's take a call from Rick in Grandview. Hi, Rick. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to say that it's good to see people doing something actively to support these troops. There was a lot of talk about that during the war, and it seems to have fallen on the wayside in many ways. But I also wondered how actively does the program address, monitor issues like concentration that are a big symptom of PTSD? And what is the attrition rate in the program at this point?
That's a good. Those are two really good questions. First of all, when you know who's in Ohio State, who's been in war, who's been in combat, that sort of a thing. How closely do you watch and pay attention to what they're going through and what kind of outward symptoms they may be showing? Michael Carroll?
We do. We know most of them because all of them won't self-identify. There's a few that might not choose to. But that's one reason we're having the conference on Monday addressed for faculty and for staff that serve veterans, whether it be through academic counseling, other counseling, is to look for the signs. You know, are they struggling in class? Have they noticed different things about the student? And they don't know how to talk to a veteran. So we're going to have some folks to help that. We're going to have actual student veteran panel that can talk to them about that and say, here's some of the things that we would welcome you to say or talk to us in private about. And here's some things, you know, you don't really want to say that might set a veteran off. So we're trying to educate the other side as well, just as like we are for the veterans, to tell them what resources are available to them. We want to give that same thing to the faculty and staff. So one, they can feel more comfortable in helping the folks that are in their class, but also to know, I need to refer this person to a counseling service or to a disability services. What we call our Office of Disability Services can give a lot of accommodations to a student if they need it in the classroom. They can get extra time for tests. They can get their tests taken in a quiet environment, and it's all done confidentially. They go down and see the disability services. The disability services then tells the professor, this individual in class needs this type of accommodation, and they don't need to tell them why or what they've gone through. If the student wants to tell that to their professor, they can, or they can keep it confidential, which we think, you know, is a much better way to do it, and it's what the student veteran is comfortable with.
Well, Mike Carroll, would you mind sticking with us for the rest of the program?
Sure.
Okay, great. Kyle, sorry we lost you. Thanks for joining us. No, that's okay. Kyle Hausman-Stokes, filmmaker and U.S. Army veteran, thanks again for your service, and thanks for joining us today, Kyle.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
And once again, I encourage everybody to go to our website at WOSU.org/all sides and check out the link to Kyle Hausman-Stokes' film. It's only about 15 minutes long and certainly worth your while. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
89.7 NPR News brings you local, national, and international news all day, every day. On 89.7 FM, hear the BBC News Hour, All Sides with Ann Fisher, Fresh Air, On Point, and Talk of the Nation. 89.7 NPR News is your all-day NPR news station. Listen on the radio or stream our service anytime online at WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Increasing clouds this afternoon, a high of 50 degrees. There is a chance of rain for tonight, maybe a thunderstorm, and a low of 43. And stay with us in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Signs begins, and it's Tech Tuesday with a discussion of social media and consumer technology. That's Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The adjustment from life in the military to life on a typical college campus can be a struggle for many. A one-day conference at OSU in March has been devoted to helping university faculty help those students just back from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. To learn more about that conference, you can go to WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link for you. Joining us now to tell her story is OSU Health Sciences undergrad Angela King. Angela is a U.S. Navy veteran who served 6 years as a hospital corpsman over the course of three deployments in Operation Iraq and Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you.
And thanks for your service.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Robin Post. Robin teaches theater at OSU. She's also the director of the Interact Theater Program. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you for having me.
So, Robin, how did theater get involved with helping veterans adjust to college life? What's the connection there?
The University Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Learning actually asked us to do a piece having to do with veteran transition, and this is something that we did last year, actually. So we're repeating it for this conference.
So what happens? What do you do?
Well, we interview students that are involved in the program. There are about 10 actors involved in the program right now. We interview several veterans, people like Mike Carroll, and then we start to improv stories around what we've heard and create a piece based on all the information that we've gathered.
And what do you see happening in those kinds of performances?
Well, the performance is interactive, which means that all of the characters stay in character when the performance is over, and so the audience gets to ask, has the opportunity to ask the characters questions. And usually that's where the most powerful part of the performance occurs, because often you don't feel comfortable asking questions to a real person in the way that you do to someone that's playing a character. So it provides more safety, I would say, for the audience to actually have a conversation that's informative and just feels safe for them.
The film that we talked about earlier, Kyle Husband Stokes' films, are very moving and very powerful. So is theater in its own way, because it's real flesh and blood in front of you. Even though maybe you know it's an actor, it's still flesh and blood. And I was wondering, is what happens in those things? What kind of questions do people ask? What are they?
Well, it runs the gamut. I mean, as do the military people that we have interviewed. They're all very different, and their experiences are all very different. And I think that that's one of the things, probably the biggest thing that we've discovered, is that there are often stereotypes about military veterans that need to be dispelled, and not a one of them is the same.
Mike?
I went to both of the productions last year, and I'll be at the one this year. And I think that's a great message that Robin mentioned is, you know, I like to say if you've met one veteran, then you've met one veteran. And she highlights, obviously, some of the struggles that they can have. But we could just as easily put 10 actors up there portraying honors and scholars and veterans that are having no issues. It makes for a little duller play. But, you know, that point to get across is very strong. And Kyle mentioned it, too, you know, that all veterans aren't ticking time bombs. And, you know, we do need to dispel those myths. But those that are having the issues that Robin's play highlight, we need to make sure we get them the resources they need.
Angela King, you were deployed a total of 3 times in Iraq and Afghanistan. How did the military prepare you for life after active duty? How did the military prepare you for college?
I think that, a little bit, compounding on what Kyle said, like, you're not really truly prepared. Like, you have an idea, and I don't think any of us really thought that it would be as difficult, or like he said, it wasn't until he got out and he was actually there on campus that it was, like, really palpable and visceral, like, experience. Like, oh, I'm having an issue. Like, they may have told me about it, but until you're really going through it, like, I don't really think that you know how to react or how you would react. And for me, at least, I didn't expect it to be as difficult as it turned out to be transitioning.
What was difficult for you?
You know, a lot of what Kyle said resonates with me, and then with other veterans I talked to too, about just feeling, you know, like you don't fit in with the people around you in your classes, and that, you know, here people are very jovial and having fun on campus, and
it's college, woohoo.
Yeah, and you're like, well, where do I fit into this, or, you know, how do I relate with my new peers? And you're missing your camaraderie with the people that, you know, you had spent the last 5-6 years with. Or so I think that, and, you know, like you said, over time, things, you really figure out where you belong, and things start to get better in the transition.
Had you been in college before?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have any contrast.
Yeah, I joined right at 17, and I left a month after high school graduation. So I, you know, my young adult life has been in the military, and that's all, you know, like Mike said, that there's multiple transitions we go through. And one of them for me was just coming from military life to civilian life. Even though I had been a civilian for the majority of my life, those 5 years when I was in the military really had shaped who I knew myself as.
You're reconditioned,
adult.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're reconditioned as a human being to expect certain things when you turn a corner.
Or in just in general, just I think that it's like a different world. I mean, I know when I talk to a veteran right away, there's a connection, regardless if they're in the Air Force or they're in the Army or they deployed and were boots and ground or they're on a ship or, you know, every veteran, like they mentioned, you know, comes from a different background or is in a different form. But I feel as though we all can relate to each other because we all share the common connection of the military lifestyle.
Robin, with the theater, Interact, OSU Theater, how did you know what direction to take with them? How did you know what topics to bring up? How to move the story?
I wouldn't say that we did know. I think that when we brought the veterans in to talk with them, we let them kind of guide it, you know, asking them what sorts of things do you think we ought to know, and what made transition difficult for you. And all of the stories really came from them, so we didn't have a predicted idea of how we wanted it to go. I guess, you know, you could be thinking, well, we want to hear about somebody that has experienced really traumatic events or something. And I think that isn't appropriate. And I think that they wanted to tell us what they wanted us to know. So it took its own shape based on what was shared with us.
My guest, that's Robin Post. She's director of Interact at OSU Theater. Also with us, Angela King. She's an OSU student and Navy veteran. And Mike Carroll, he's a retired colonel, U.S. Air Force Veterans Resource Analyst at the OSU Office of Undergraduate Education. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm going to turn to Tess in Westerville. Tess, make sure you turned on your radio. Hi, Tess. Tess, you're going to have to turn down your radio. Tess, are you there? No. Okay. Well, we had a caller earlier. They hung up, but I am curious. She wanted to know if veterans get special treatment at OSU. And I'm not quite sure what she meant by that, but maybe, Mike, you can shed some light on that idea.
Yes and no. I would tell you, because part of our goal is to integrate them just like any other students coming to us, but we do look at their unique experiences. For instance, in admissions, we look very carefully at what they've done in the military, and we value the leadership experiences that they've had, and that's taken into account in their score on admissions. So they do make a definite effort there. We also have, I think I briefly mentioned, a new veterans orientation, which is separate from the regular student orientation. Our veteran students actually go through the transfer student orientation because we recognize they're not 18 years old coming out from college. Mm-hmm. But then we have a veterans transition one for them to specifically talk to the issues such as the working the GI Bill benefit paperwork through our system, what resources as far as counseling and the VA downtown. And we bring all these folks in to let them see them. You know, they know who they are, what the phone number is, where their office is, and all those type of things. So we do and we don't. But, again, the goal is to help them make that transition to a successful college student and a successful transition back to civilian life.
Someone asked earlier, too, and I'm not sure we got at it, the attrition rate of war veterans.
It's probably, I know nationally it's a little bit higher than you know, your normal students coming through, but it. For non-traditional students, those that aren't 18 coming back, it's a little bit higher as well. I like to say, think of the veteran population as a non-traditional student, but more of. And by that, I mean they're more likely to be over 25 or over 30 than our other students. They're more likely to be married. They're more likely to have children or dependents. They're more likely to have been deployed to a war zone. They're more likely to have post-traumatic stress than someone else. That doesn't mean that, you know, all people with post-traumatic stress are from the military, but they're more of all these things. So we do have to look at this population and see what resources they might need and give them, you know, some help in some areas from admissions all the way through to graduation. And even the Alumni Association, you know, they've been very supportive of this effort. And because the goal is to help folks get their degree and graduate and move on to better jobs and better lives.
Angela King, what was your experience in coming to OSU after your military service?
We definitely, you know, we're starting to, through Mike, they're starting to implement a lot of great things, and I've been excited to be a part of that too. But, you know, when I initially came, we did not have the orientation yet. And but thankfully, I connected with the student organization that's sort of in its infancy also, but is coming along. And through that, I was able to meet people that were other veterans. And I think that really helps. It really, you know, it gave me a connection on campus. And I learned through their experiences that they already have had or already had as far as, you know, resources or anything else that I could need as far, you know, like they're willing to say, oh, this worked for me or this doesn't, or I have a really hard time studying, like let's form a study group. Like I think that in general, it was just easier to relate to other veterans.
Do you find yourself looking out for them too and feel like they're looking out for you?
Definitely. I mean, I think like we said before, the camaraderie thing and, I mean, my biggest thing, especially with sharing my story or sharing my experiences with the other veterans, is I want them to succeed. I want them to graduate from college. I want them to hit the ground and run and transition successfully back into the civilian world. I don't want them to suffer. I don't think it's fair. I think we're all going through a transition, and I don't think it should be alone. You know, I think we should share with each other.
Yeah, one of the things we really tried to do is take the feedback from the veterans. You know, when I first started working this project, I met with a lot of them, and the top two things they said they wanted was their own orientation to describe the resources and a better, much better website, which we're going to roll out on Monday as well. But what we did was, you know, we built a website, and this is what we think it is, but then we brought in the student veteran organization, and they said, well, that's nice, but how about this and this and this instead? So we made a lot of the changes to do that. And then likewise, what I heard from the faculty and staff was, we just need more information. So that's why I proposed the conference to help them get that same information, but also to hear directly from Angela and other veterans who will be on a panel at the conference.
Robin?
Yeah, I would also say that, you know, for students that are not veterans that are at OSU, what we often heard was ask us about our situation, ask us about our lives, ask us about our experience. We're not sort of hands off, and have compassionate interest. And because I think one of the biggest disconnects is from peer to peer. And so, you know, go beyond asking about my experience, and then it's a superficial response, and that's the end of it. Like, if you're really interested, ask, and ask with respect about, you know, just be sort of a compassionate, respectful human being, but do ask. Don't feel as if my story is – because this, my sense from all of the veterans we met was that they wanted to talk about it. They wanted to really deeply share about their experience, and they would share with people who they felt – were respectful of that experience. So I would just encourage students and faculty and staff to get to know these people.
And students can go to these performances?
Yes. This one specifically is for faculty, staff, administration.
Okay. But there have been others, and there
Absolutely.
Will be others.
Yes.
Well, that's a good question. Before we go, we're running out of time, but Mike Carroll, to what extent does OSU feel a need to educate and edify the student body on this score, the larger student body?
We definitely think that they need to understand who their peers are and who they're in class with and what they bring to the campus. They bring a wealth of leadership and organizational experience that, you know, your typical 18-year-old doesn't have. Just as our other non-traditional students do from industry and whatever else their life experiences are. So we really encourage them to get to know their fellow students and learn from them.
Well, Mike Carroll, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
Mike Carroll, he's Veterans Resource Analyst at OSU's Office of Undergraduate Education. We'll put a link on our website at wosu.org/allsides if you want to learn more about that conference next week. Angela King, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Angela King, she's an OSU student, a Navy veteran, and also Robin Post, Director of Interact at OSU Theater. Robin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.